Now, it is my pleasure to introduce today's speakers for this session. Jennifer Bonnke is clinical nurse educator of the Ambulatory Surgery Unit and Post-Anesthesia Care Unit, Endeavor Health. Julia Treby is clinical nurse educator of the Ambulatory Surgery Unit, Post-Anesthesia Care Unit, and Cardiovascular Institute at Endeavor Health as well. And Jillian Wander is clinical nurse educator at Endeavor Health. Please join me in welcoming our speakers.
Well, good morning, everybody. How are we doing? Good? Super? Okay. I know, you know, we're at the last day of our conference. Everybody might be tired, and we're thinking, oh, gosh, it's the longest one yet. What is this going to be like? We don't really know either. No, I'm just kidding. But we're very, very, very excited to be here today. The three of us up here have been working together for the last 2 years to a newly renovated educator position, and we're very, very, very excited to be here. We're excited to spend the next few hours with you to share ideas and resources that you can utilize to be able to take back to your organizations. Hopefully everyone's found the coffee this morning. It seems sometimes it's hard to find. There's also water in the back if anybody needs that. We also have three scheduled breakout sessions to talk about today throughout this presentation, so please feel free to raise your hand and ask any questions at any time. We're very low-key, personable, and definitely want to make this fun and enjoyable for everybody attending. Without further ado, let's just get started. The first thing we would like to do is really go over our abstract. So we all know as nursing staff and managers and leaders that when certain criteria is met for a specific standard, it is proven to improve patient outcomes. That's really why we're here. We all want to keep our patients and families safe, and we want to always go back to our core guidelines that not only make us who we are, but just keep our organization striving for greatness and for what we want to achieve. When we invest in all of our staff education, this leads to improved staff satisfaction and also retention. It also promotes staff engagement within the organization and makes us all feel valued. Does everybody agree with that? Yeah. At the end of the day, I think with all of us as managers in this room, you're always trying to make your staff feel valued, feel important, and feel like they're doing the right thing. For when they go home, that they feel good. Some learning objectives that we have ready for you today. This, again, is just geared towards sharing our experiences and our tools that we, us three, have used to enhance staff education. The four objectives we want to talk about today is how to build and evaluate a core peri-anesthesia learning needs assessment, develop yearly education based on that learning needs assessment. We want to share tools that we use to plan and implement a simulated learning environment. And don't be nervous if you don't have one at your institution. We'll walk you through and talk about what we can do instead. And also creating a standardized peri-anesthesia orientation. Does anybody have one of those in their orientation or organization right now? Okay. All right. Very good. As clinical nurse educators begin to get together, you have to have some sort of basis in mind. So we developed what we call a charter. What are our goals for the upcoming year? Raise your hand if you have an OR and or pre-op, post-op, PACU educator within your organization. Oh, wow. So there's a lot of you in here. Okay. All right. Very good. At our organization, Endeavor Health, based out of Chicago area, we have established OR educators, but we did not have an educator for all the other areas, so pre-op, PACU, known as ambulatory surgery and post-anesthesia recovery unit. We were the first educators within this newly developed role and created this charter to help us visualize our goals and keep us on track. A few of them that we are looking at is developing our needs assessment through our SurveyMonkey and ASU PACU staff to complete our needs assessment. We gave target goals at the end. So we did this at the beginning of the year, and we made our goals, our target end dates, to be later, so we never disappointed ourselves. If we got it done early, it was phenomenal, and we were never late. Evaluate our needs assessment and how to develop our yearly education calendar. Standardizing our documentation between all phases of care. A large one is updating our policies for perianesthesia areas to align with our ASPAN standards and all evidence-based practices. We also wanted to standardize orientation, all of our RN orientation. No matter which one of our hospitals you were working at, what was the basis of your orientation? How long was it going to be? What kind of surgeries were you going to see? And we also promote specialty certification with a goal of greater than 51% of our nursing staff to be certified. Just to give a little bit of background, in pre-op, post-op, and PACU, our standards are the ASPAN standards. This is a professional organization, highly promoted at our facility. Within everybody here in this office here, do you promote specialty certification through your AORN? Yeah, everybody's saying yeah. Okay, very good. Well, we recognized that there was a need to promote our ASPAN standards and care within our departments, and just to get us all back to the basis, start back at square one. What are we doing every day, and how can we strive for greatness? Some of our ASPAN core competencies consist of our ACLS, our PALS, anesthetic agents and adjuncts, blood product administration, everybody's doing that. Roughly about 30 core competencies. These are just a few examples. And we built these into our learning needs assessment. These are updated every 2 years, so we can always go back to them. And now I'm gonna have Juliet come up, and she's gonna talk to you about our Survey Monkeys.
Thank you, Jillian. Alrighty then. Hi everybody, my name's Juliet. Just wanted to review how we built a core perianesthesia learning needs assessment. This is an example. Raise your hand if your organization assesses educational needs for your team annually. Okay, very good. At Endeavor Health, our goal was to create a core learning needs assessment across all four main hospitals, which include a site at Evanston Hospital, Glenbrook Hospital, Highland Park Hospital, and Skokie Hospital. So there are some variances across our system, our healthcare system, regarding our four hospitals. Evanston Hospital is our level one trauma center. Glenbrook is now our cardiovascular institute, which just opened several months ago. So that's a new and exciting adventure, along with being the eye institute for our four hospitals. Highland Park has many specialties in urology, gynecology, and pediatrics. And Skokie is our orthopedic and spine institute. So we used our ASPAN competencies to create those 37 core questions for our needs assessment. So basically all four hospital needs assessments had 37 core questions that are all the same. And then we added on roughly about 11 to 13 specific sites, site-specific questions that meet the educational demand for our unique patient populations, since our hospitals are a little bit different in the fact that we care for different patient populations at each hospital. This perianesthesia needs assessment identified and determined the skills and knowledge required to care for the patient populations. So this is just an example, this slide basically. It was a direct link to the needs assessment, and we also put in like a QR code for easy access for our team to complete that. All right, so how many of you have an online survey software that can be used to obtain like data and analysis within your organization? Okay, great. In regards to that, like for example, we used SurveyMonkey. That was our excuse me, that was what we used at our organization. That was what is available to us. However, there's many things out there, just for your knowledge. I'm sure you already know this, but SurveyMonkey, JotForm, Google Forms, and Question Pro, some of those have. So for some areas that don't have that availability, you can use those in a free format and still be able to reach your goals as far as, you know, putting together a learning assessment for your organization. So if you don't know, this would be something to ask your leadership team when you go back to your organization in the event that you're not sure if you have that availability to you. So when we use SurveyMonkey to create our needs assessment through our single sign-on Endeavor Health email, that's how we get through it. We were all able to make the changes to edit each other's needs assessment and analyze the data together. We worked closely with our clinical coordinators and our managers to ensure staff members had plenty of time to complete the survey, and we wanted to ensure we had at least 75% participation, and that was so we could have a good sample size to make sure that we're really assessing the true needs of that full department. So you can see on this slide that it just kind of breaks down the total questions for Evanston. That's on the top. Evanston Hospital had 47 questions, and it even breaks down so many different things within SurveyMonkey. You can add so many different variables where it just says it should really take about 18 minutes approximately for your staff member to fill out that needs assessment. And then Glenbrook had 42. That was before we opened up the CVI unit. So now we have, it would probably be much longer now if we had redone that. And then Highland Park had 44 and Skokie at 48. So, so this is a screenshot of how we wanted the nurses to rank their experience level with each topic. So we came up with, we looked at some several, like Likert scales and tried to determine how do we, you know, best gain a really good, how do we want to say that? I'm just trying to think. How do we best gather the information that we're looking for in the ranking of how experienced the nurses are and how they are going to be ranking themselves in the when we're asking the specific questions, and I'll show that further. So we have the novice beginner, obviously that's the new grad, maybe that just graduated but no peri-anesthesia experience, and then we have somewhat competent and experienced RM but has not really practiced the skill often in the clinical setting. We use competent, the experienced RM that has practiced the skills in a clinical setting in the peri-anesthesia environment. And then we have proficient, which is an experienced RN that's independent in the skill, maybe has many years in peri-anesthesia nursing, but they're not quite confident to teach others. And then we have the expert, which is the experienced RN that's confident to teach or mentor others. Maybe your preceptor or so, who have maybe 15 to 20 years in peri-anesthesia nursing. So here's an example of a question within the SurveyMonkey analysis, and only 7% of the nurses felt proficient with this high-risk, low-frequency event known as LAST, or local anesthetic systemic toxicity. We analyzed the data for all sites, four sites, and identified the four topics that had the lowest scoring self-assessment across the system. LAST was one of the topics that had the lowest score, self-assessments at each site. That was a big deal for us. It was a real big eye-opener to realize that we had only 7% across all four sites that felt comfortable if they were ever involved in a event that the patient had experienced LAST. During our breakout session, we'll pull up a SurveyMonkey to show you what it looked like. So I'm going to invite Jen up, and she's going to be talking about developing annual education.
everybody. I'm Jen Bonnke. Can you guys hear me okay? Okay, perfect. I just want to let you know I'm not sick. I have a paralyzed vocal cord. I was a preemie. I was born 1 pound, 12 ounces. So been through a lot and forever indebted to peri anesthesia nurses. So if you can't hear me, feel forward to scoot up. All right, so I'm going to talk about our annual education. So after we created our great SurveyMonkey, we utilized those SurveyMonkey results to build our annual education for our nurses. I know we asked you earlier if you assess the educational needs on an annual basis, but raise your hand if you or your organization participates in annual education for your staff. Great. Oh, awesome. All right. It's 100%. So later during the breakout session, we can talk about how you analyzed, how you came up with those topics. We chose to come up with those topics by utilizing the SurveyMonkey, but I'd love to hear your ideas too. So one of the, so with the needs assessment criteria, we analyzed the SurveyMonkey, and then we had four topics in mind. What happened was the topics can change, right? As healthcare changes, the needs of our nurses change. So later in the year, our nurses were required to get ACLS and PALS for the first time in their career. The classes were taught within the organization. Many of the nurses brought back feedback after attending those classes where they felt overwhelmed with the SIM situation. A lot of them hadn't done a SIM since nursing school, which could have been, you know, 30, 40 years. And SIM labs have changed and evolved over time. And so they didn't even feel comfortable opening crash carts and being a code leader. And they were very anxious to go back to PALS and ECLS. So we took that into consideration and decided to add an adult emergency and a pediatric emergency to our annual education to make sure they were comfortable and give them time to feel confident in those emergency situations. All right, so this is just, I know it's kind of small, but you have the resources and the PowerPoint here, so don't feel like you have to write everything down. But this is a screenshot of one of our annual education for Glenbrook Hospital. So what we did is we wanted to have core educational topics at each site. But then, since we, as Juliet talked about, we all have site-specific and certain patients at each site. And so we wanted specific education for each hospital. So we created a shared drive with a bunch of resources in it. So we had PowerPoints, contact info for reps, different documents that we had created to help share information and standardize education. And so this is an example of Glenbrook's calendar. So the red is mandatory, and then the blue if we have staff meetings, purple's in services. So then we can look at each other's calendar as well and piggyback off, and you don't have to reinvent the wheel. All right, so we're going to take our first breakout session. So this is the time for any questions, any opportunity, if you guys have to take a restroom break. And if you want, we can also show you one of our SurveyMonkey so you can look at how we organized it. Because I know sometimes that's the hardest part is creating it. All right, do you want me to pull up the SurveyMonkey so you can see it? Awesome. So this is an example of Skokie. So like Juliet said, we all had the, I think it was 37 questions that were the same. So first we wanted to target what phase of care they work. So at our sites, not every pre and PACU nurse is cross-trained, or pre and post-op nurse is cross-trained in a PACU, but we wanted to make sure that they all had the basic nursing knowledge and certain skills we wanted them to learn. So we asked them what phase of care do they work. And then this is an example of what it looks like after we analyze the data. So these answer choices down here, you can filter them however you want. So as I go through the SurveyMonkey, You can filter by what phase of care they work, their responses. It's amazing. It's kind of overwhelming, but I'll show you how we filtered it. So that was our first question we asked. Oh, and we made it mandatory so they couldn't skip a question because, you know, some people click through it quickly. We asked what shift do they typically work? Do they rotate? Do they do days mid-shift closing? We asked their preferred learning method. This was really cool to see. Most people want in-person. So least preferred is green, and then most preferred is the blue. So as you can see, most people did not want virtual classes. Most people wanted the in-person or online learning. Oh, thanks, I'm short.
Maybe home.
Thanks. I know, I wear heels, but I'm still short.
How's that? Maybe that'll be better.
Perfect, thank you. So this was one of the questions we wanted to assess. I know we can't make everybody happy, but we wanted to ask them what time of day they preferred in-person education. So we asked about 6 o'clock or earlier, 8 o'clock. This also was going to help us develop our calendar for each site as well. So like at Highland Park, I did most of my education at 6 o'clock on Wednesdays because it was a late start day. Then this was preferred time of year for a skills day. So we think they read this question backwards when they originally submitted it because most people were least preferred June or August, which is actually when we had the SimPlan. But once we talked to them, they said they preferred June or August because the holidays are in the winter. Then we asked if they were specialty certified, and then I'll get down. So this was the ranking that they talked about. So this top right here was at each question, at the top of each question, so they didn't have to scroll through and go back up to the top. So I won't go through all of them, but just so you can see what it looks like. So blood administration, right? Nobody answered that they felt like a novice or beginner, which is great. And so obviously we weren't going to include that in our annual education, but we were going to include these questions every year because as people retire, people get hired, that could change. So I'm going to show you the last question. Dermatomes. Where's the one?
It's okay, do a couple.
Yeah. So I'll show you some of them. So we even asked questions about regulatory guidelines with the Joint Commission. And so we chose to analyze it by the comfort level. So expert, novice, beginner. And that's how we correlated our responses. And then at the bottom here, we had site-specific topics, so things like arm sling education, we wouldn't use at Highland Park, but we would use at Skokie, which is the Orthopedic and Spine Institute. So this was included in the Skokie education. And then these questions, too, we didn't, even if we weren't going to include them in the four topics for the annual education, Jillian can use the site-specific topics to say, hey, I realize that we might need education this year on arm slings. So that helped her. Did that help you visualizing it? Okay, great. Do you have any questions? I know we can get a mic there if you guys have any questions about SurveyMonkey, how to create a needs assessment.
Just raise your hand if you have one. I can bring the mic to you so all can hear your questions.
Yeah.
Can you share, I don't know, is this on the link in the, to be able to get all these questions that you guys had?
Yeah,
I think
so,
like for my educator, sometimes just building the questions she struggles with a little bit and like what to even ask.
Yeah.
It's a lot more broad, like what do you want education? And people are like, cricket, you know, nothing. So I think having just some general ideas to share with her would be nice.
Yeah. So we can share this document or we can share a SurveyMonkey link, but I think we just need your email. At the end of the presentation, we'll have our email, so you can always email us for any resources.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, we're all about sharing. Especially since we made our first first SurveyMonkey, you're going to build on that every year. And you can remain having the same questions for the first 20 or 30, however many you kind of want, and then change them throughout the year. Go ahead with your question.
You stated that you added ACLS and PALS to your annual education, and you do that annually. Is this the certification portion of that, or is it a busted down version? Because, you know, you only have to do that every 2 years for certification purposes.
Right. So the ACLS and PALS, that's every 2 years. But that was the first time they did it. And when they came back, everyone was terrified. They said, I don't feel comfortable being a co-leader. I haven't checked a crash cart in years. So we kind of took a step back because originally we were going to have stroke education on our annual education. We said, well, pediatrics and adults might take a little priority. Annual education. So we just did an adult emergency and a pediatric emergency. So it wasn't like a true ACLS PALS. We can show you guys the resource we made. It was pretty cool. We had fake celebrities in it. That was fun. But yeah, so every 2 years they need ACLS PALS. We just wanted to level set and backtrack and just make sure we worked as a group. So I'll go through it in the next section. Yeah, it'll make more sense.
Do you do that in-house yourself? That certification, or do you use a program?
It was in-house. So they can go outside if they want, but it was recommended to go in-house because we have our beautiful sim lab at Evanston. Yep.
I'll just add to what Jen was saying. So that was a new requirement from our leadership team to add to our ambulatory surgery pre-post nurses that needed to have that education, the ACLS and PALS, which before it was highly recommended. However, our ASPAN guidelines had changed, and now it is recommended. It's not recommended. It's really required for you to have that. So we wanted to follow those guidelines pretty much to the T. For our organization, and being like what Jen said, that was a very new skill for many of those nurses. And we just wanted to reinforce that, those skills that they learned during their first classes for the ACLS and PALS, and that just changed our trajectory as far as what we wanted to include in our annual SIM. And that was, we received great feedback for that. That just really did reinforce their experience and knowledge in a comfortable environment.
All right. Any other questions about the SurveyMonkey part? Okay, great. So I'll get back to the PowerPoint. Okay, so the next one, this is the fun part. So now we're going to talk about how we utilized our tools to create the simulated learning environment. So raise your hand if your organization has a sim lab or some sort of area where your staff can practice hands-on scenarios. All right, good.
A few.
Yeah, a few. So we're privileged at Endeavor Health to have a great sim lab with a dedicated team that's very passionate about education, just like we are. So this picture here is one of the mannequins from the sim lab. I'm sure everyone knows, but the sim lab, the mannequin can talk to you. It can blink. You can check pulses on it, put Foleys in, IVs. It's crazy. They were so excited, too, because they got 4 female mannequins, so they were excited to have mannequins with eyelashes on it. It was wild. And then we were able to go and practice, and we got to see some med students practice delivering babies, so that was eye-opening, too. So as I talked about, and then these are T-shirts we made. So they said, don't worry, I did it on a mannequin once. So like we talked about, we wanted to help ensure our nurses felt comfortable with the sim situation and still enhance upon their knowledge they learned from PALS and ACLS. So we wanted to make sure it was a welcoming environment because education shouldn't be scary, right? A lot of people get very overwhelmed when they have new information, and we wanted to help them process that. So I'll go through it, and it'll make more sense. This is one of the flyers we sent out. We sent it out about 4 months in advance. So we sent out a flyer just like this. That was a save the date. We sent out pre-readings, which we're happy to share too. So our 4 topics we picked were adult emergency, pediatric emergency, last local anesthetic systemic toxicity, and malignant hyperthermia or MH, which I know everyone here knows about those topics. So we sent out a lot of reading about that, some from ARN as well. We wanted to make sure they had the pre-readings completed to have a basic understanding before they came to the sim lab. So if you had to send pre-reading material to your staff, where would you go to find it? Do you know? I would say the ARN website, right? I don't know if you've ever gotten a chance to look at it, but it's amazing. So there's a bunch of great resources with the sim labs. I can pull it up later and show you. It was great. I wish they were tailored towards PACU because we could have used them, but they were wonderful. So they have an MH1, they have a laryngospasm, but it's geared more towards OR nursing, and it even has pre-readings, it has how long you should spend on your post-brief, it even has quizzes at the end, so it's a very great resource. For us, we use the literature search, and I'll go over that in the next slide, too. All right, so then we realized this was a very big undertaking. We had almost 200 nurses go through the sim lab in a week period. We needed to stay organized, right? We're all very type A. But we created a Google Doc to help us stay on track. And we're happy to share that with you as well. I have a screenshot on the next slide. So we recognize as we're building it, we need breaks for lunch breaks, travel time, and staffing, right? Because things come up, PTO. So we collaborated with our managers, clinical coordinators across the four sites, and we figured out that it would probably be best for staffing purposes to only have a PM session on Monday and an AM session on Friday. So this was flexible, right? So we had about two sessions. So the first session each day was 7:30 to 11:45. And then we gave ourselves a half hour break for lunch. And then 12:15 to 4:30 was the second. We wanted to keep the group sizes small because we wanted this to be meaningful. So we had four groups with about six nurses in each group, give or take. And we assigned different ASU PACU nurses from each site. So that was nice because then they got to meet each other, hear different stories. So it was about 50 nurses a day. All right, so this is a screenshot from our Google Doc. So what we did is we gave the clinical coordinators access to it. And I know it's really tiny up there, but let's see if I can point. Okay, so it's really tiny up here, but these were just guidelines we created for the CCs. So we talked about, you know, trying to have people switch on their day off and utilize your resource nurses. We wanted the clinical coordinators to come as well. So we had to remind them to schedule themselves in. So what they would do is they would put nurses' names here. And so if there were leftover spots from like an ASU nurse at Evanston, they could put an ASU nurse from Highland Park. So it was flexible because we wanted to make sure every day was filled. We also honored previously approved PTO because that would just be mean if we took that away, work-life balance. So we had a backup plan in mind if people were unable to attend due to PTO, due to, you know, illness, scheduling. We just had a makeup exam, which we're happy to share too. And they had through the end of the year to complete it. And then we had a sign-off sheet. I'll show you on the next slide. Okay. So we really, truly believe one of the reasons we were so successful with this undertaking was because we stayed organized and we communicated clearly with everyone, staff members, managers, anyone on the leadership team, and especially with each other. So we had, these are just screenshots of examples of emails we sent. We wanted to make sure all the information was communicated the same across the four sites. So even questions like, do I get paid for travel time? Do I get paid for doing the pre-work at work? Those kind of questions, we wanted to make sure that message was the same across the system. Okay, and then this is an example of our sim lab roster that we had. We'll show you pictures of the sim lab during the next breakout session. But what we had is we had the name, the date they were supposed to sign up for, the session, and we assigned them in groups like we talked about. So when they came in, they would write their name, sign it. We also had a QR code with a pre-survey and a post-survey. So they had to show us on their phone, it would say SurveyMonkey completed, before they got their sheet to sign off. And then I'll take it, hand it over to Jillian. Everybody staying with us so far? All right, awesome. So this is the validation form that we used as the nurses progressed through each simulation experience. We'll show you pictures of our setup and our sim lab during the next breakout session, but each nurse that arrived was going to a generalized table and grabbing one of these forms. So this is just the form that's going to be in their employee file that says, yes, they passed, they went through all four sessions, and we're good to go. So again, you can see our titles, adult mock code. We chose an adult pacing situation. So we had our mannequin go into third degree heart block. So that was the actual scenario. And everybody had to learn how to pace. We did malignant hyperthermia. Not everybody knew where the cart was at in our operating room. So where do we go to even get that? That was awesome. And then pediatric mock code, we specialized and really focused on pediatric laryngospasm, which can happen in the operating room, and it can also happen after. So that one was really great. And then local anesthetic systemic toxicity. A lot of our hospital sites, our anesthesia teams doing a lot of nerve blocks. They're doing peripheral nerve blocks that can completely cause this. So where are resources at? That's again why we went to these topics. And then we would just had completed yes or no, the date, validator initials. So each one of us were in a room and we signed them off with our initials at the end of it and wrote any comments. Most of the time they were NA, but sometimes we actually just wrote great job. You know, you finally did it. Everyone was nervous about, oh my goodness, what is this going to be like? So we try to keep it low key and really have a positive learning environment. So that's what this looked like. Next, the dates for the simulation week were communicated to me in advance. This was part of the question that we sent out to the staff that we really wanted them to give us the feedback for. Like, I know this is different, this is new, but did we do a good job? And look at that, we had strongly agree and agree. Neither agree or disagree. I think those people just didn't have their coffee. They weren't ready, but everyone else was very communicative here and appreciative of the information in advance. Not one person that came to the simulation lab came in not knowing what to expect. We had no secrets. It was, this is exactly what is going to happen. Study it, learn it, know it, come and do it. Okay? So it was really good. The other question we had is the simulation training was provided in a relaxed, informal environment. So again, we continue to talk on this, but sometimes it just takes someone to feel comfortable to really empower learning and make people feel like, hey, wait a second, I am really smart. You know, they're not as nervous. They're taking care of people. We're saving lives, you know, every day. We're taking care of people, regardless of whether or not where you work in a peri-anesthesia setting. It's just what we do. So almost 100% strongly agree, and 19 agree that it was a relaxed environment. So we were very, very proud of that. Here, this is what our makeup sign-off documentation looked like. This also went into the employee's file, so anybody that was unable to participate, we said had to have a very good reason, because who wouldn't want to come hang out with us and learn some, but for we only had, I want to say roughly, I think it was only like 9 or 10 nurses out of 200 that could not attend for whatever reason. We gave ourselves a deadline of probably a month, I want to say, after they returned, whether they were sick or whether they were on vacation. We had some nurses that already had pre-planned vacation to be in the Philippines, so of course they weren't going to be back. But what we did is we made a makeup exam. So we made generally about 10 questions per each sim. So it was a 40 question, almost 45 question quiz or exam that we asked them to do, and we wanted them to make sure that they completed at least greater than an 85% on that exam to get the certification of, hey, you passed your simulation. So this is what we did. We had them sign, and then our validator signed. Again, goes right into the employee file. Never look at it again unless your commissionary
body comes and says, let me see your file, right? So here's some pictures. We really wanted to be able to showcase what it looked like in our simulation environment. Our nurses are actually smiling. It was very fun. The very top room up here, or the very top photo, top left, this was like the very opening room session. So this is where we kind of went over general housekeeping rules, what to expect for the day. We broke them up into their rooms. And not only are these nurses working together every day, but because we have four sites that we're in charge of and work together with, we didn't say everyone that works at Skokie is going to go on Tuesday, right? We're still day-to-day operations are happening. Not everyone can be leaving because then there's nobody in the operating room or getting patients ready for surgery. So you got to meet other coworkers from your other sites that have the exact same job that you do. So everybody really liked that too. I'm not sure about everyone's organization in here, but we also float to all of our other sister sites. So if one hospital is short on staffing and we have an extra nurse, definitely sending one over there as much as we can. So you're meeting people from the other sites you may not have seen in a long time. So this really fostered teamwork and learning to work with different people in the field. We'll go through a little bit more as we go through. Again, here's some photos kind of around the mannequins. There's a skeleton in the bottom right that is leading you to the way of the sim lab. So everybody kind of stopped and took photos by him. Very, very exciting. Here we had half days prevented us from getting burnout as well. So we really spoke on how important it was to have Monday and Fridays for only half days. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we're definitely reserved for two sessions each day, but by Friday, we all thought, ooh, we're almost done. We've got 48 more nurses to come. Here we go. We got to have the same energy on Thursday and Friday that we did on Monday and Tuesday. So that really helped us as educators stay intrigued and stay motivated to get everybody through, so everybody had the same experience. Our staff feedback, we made a word cloud. It was the best way to present this to our leadership team on positive or negative feedback that came from the staff. Most people, when you have a free text option, unless you're having somebody that was upset, I feel like you're normally getting one-word answers or nothing at all. So we really try to promote something in the comment section. So we had, hey, maybe we should do it on the weekend. Oh boy, I don't know who that was, but we had, this was helpful. We had perfect. Coffee. We did not have coffee, so that was a request. Hey, maybe we should have had coffee. Excellent. Coordinated. You were cheerful, fun. It was organized. Snacks. Oh, man, we kind of hit the ball on snacks. We did have candy. Maybe it wasn't the best candy, but we did have some candy you could stop by and grab. Stress-free. I really want to point out that one because, as we know, in the nursing field, when you're even in a real-life environment, it's very stressful. But learning, you don't want it to be stressful. You want to go through the steps, learn, and be able to be with a teacher or instructor that doesn't make you feel silly for maybe not knowing what to do next. So we were very grateful to see this stress-free option. You can see it says great and then chairs. I want to point that out. We did not have chairs, so it wasn't great chairs. We were just great, and we were requesting chairs. So that's what that came from. And then awesome, of course, that was great. And then educator feedback, this was very important. This was our feedback as we worked there and went through these simulations. We improved our communication channels for last minute changes. We didn't improve. That's what we wanted to do. You know, there were a lot of like last minute changes. Hey, oh my goodness, this nurse can't come. We're having like somebody didn't show up. We had a call in. This person's not coming. So we just wanted to try to find a way to communicate that better for the next year that we would be doing this. They're little minute changes. So as big as this project was, to not have a lot to kind of change was really awesome. We were very impressed with staff punctuality. We had a lot of nurses show up early. Our simulation environment, I don't know if we spoke on this yet, but it is located in only one of our hospitals. It's not in every hospital that we have, our four sites. So if you didn't work at Evanston, you had to travel there. So when we speak about travel time, that's what we meant by you're not going to your job, you're going to the other hospital to go to the simulation. So we had to make sure we sent out directions, how to get there, where to park. Whew, it was a lot. on-call scheduling feedback, our Google Doc challenges, making sure our clinical coordinators felt comfortable and confident to be able to utilize that document. If you've ever used Google Doc, we love that it's a working document. So I might be making edits and changes, and if Juliet or Jen open up that document, they're going to see in real time the changes. So I highly recommend the Google Doc. And then management of inappropriate behavior. We did not have a lot of that. We maybe had one or two where we had to really do that. But as educators, oh boy, we are not good at that. Not as good as a manager would be. So we didn't really know what to do. It was a little bit ignored. But for the most part, we did a really good job. So another breakout session here in time for questions. We also can show a little bit of videos and some SIN pictures here, but I wanted to take this opportunity to see if anybody had any questions so far. We must be staying really good on track, or everyone's really tired. I'm not sure.
Julie?
All right, we got one table on the left. All right.
Did you guys only include nurses in your education, or like your ancillary staff as well?
You're gonna hate me, but I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry. Okay. There we go. Did you include just nurses or any of your ancillary staff as well?
And oh, great question. Great question. This was our first time doing a project like this and bringing all the staff members together. So we only did nurses at this time. I think that is a great opportunity to try to bring other people into that environment and maybe even try to mix them in to where they're all working together like we do in real life. I think that a barrier to that is getting all those staff together on same days or during it during the week. So I would highly suggest or recommend us doing that in our own hospital setting. Hey, there's some downtime. Let's pull some people together and run through a little quick simulation. Hey, something happened. I remember back when I was in nursing school, I graduated and I got my first job, and it was almost like you had to go through a bad experience with your preceptors in order to like make the team. You know, I don't know if that happens anymore, but oh goodness. I remember I went to lunch and I came back and I worked in a surgical ICU, a very high stressful environment. And the crash cart was outside my patient's room, who was intubated and sedated. So it was a quiet night in the ICU. It was okay. But everyone was kind of yelling and excited and, Jillian, hurry, come over here. You're patient. And it was all fake, right? So I was nervous, Nelly. I was so scared. And I mean, it made me who I am, right? And you get excited and do it. But we are never going to do that to somebody. Oh, boy. So I just share that as, like, don't do that to your staff members. But make it low stress and fun and exciting at the same time. But great question. Again, this is a long session, so if anybody has to use the restroom, please feel free. It's about 9:30, and we have until 11. We still have other things to go over, of course, but just to keep us on track. So our very beginning, just to do a refresher. So we started with our SurveyMonkey. What questions do we want to ask our staff first? What education are we going to do? It's not always going to come from the educators or the managers. It's going to come from them. It's going to come from the staff. Hey, I don't feel comfortable with this. I don't know how to do this. So our basic questions came from AORN. Well, I'm going to say that for you because you're in the operating room, but ours came from ASPAN. Again, there's going to be all these topics that you have to be confident in, and that's how we like really chose the beginning questions. I know that was big from someone in the back, like, how'd you choose your questions? Well, they're all kind of already there, and we just gave them to the staff. And then with the site-specific questions, that helped add on other topics that may come up, and then there was a comment session at the bottom. Like, hey, if something wasn't on here and you thought of something, please let us know, and then that could be a topic that we utilize. But I think Jen and Juliet would agree that the most important part was doing these surveys and having pre and post questions, because you have to have the data to prove what you're doing in an education role. Why did you do this? Why did you do that? Well, the staff told me 90% of our nurses didn't know where the malignant hyperthermia cart was. That's not true. That's an example. But that's how you can take that to your leadership and say, look what we did. And then the post-op survey says, do you now know where the malignant hyperthermia card is? It's something as simple as that. And you can automatically see like almost 100%. I went through the simulation. Now I know where this is and I feel confident. And it can't be one and done. You've got to circle back to that again. You don't want people to forget, right? It's not like MH happens every day. Thank goodness we're in 2024. Can it still happen? Absolutely. And there's going to be times where it does, but it's significantly less from 60 years ago, right?
I think it's important to say that you need to utilize your staff meetings that you have routinely. We are so privileged at Endeavor Health to have dedicated time, and maybe this is something, if you don't have dedicated time for education built into your surgical schedule on a weekly basis, that you can advocate for that. I would go back to your leadership team and say, this is really important to our team. And, you know, for so many purposes, right? It's not just about education. It's about just being able to communicate the changes that happen on a day-to-day basis and learning opportunities that you can share with your team to take that back to your leadership team and say, this is really important. We need to try to figure this out. So on Wednesdays, the second Wednesday of every month, we have dedicated time from 6 to 7, and we have late start days. Most places have late start days that they can use that for staff meetings and or education. Usually it defaults to a staff meeting. However, we were able to squeak in a lot of education during part of those staff meetings or have a separate day for staff meetings with late start dates. So that's really important. And during those times, during our staff meetings at our separate sites, Jillian would have a separate day where she would have a late start day, and she would reinforce a lot of the education that we have provided in the sim or put together some short form of education to say, hey, let's review what we just did at our simulation, you know, maybe 3 months ago, things of that nature. I think it's really important just to reinforce the education so it stays fresh in everybody's mind and they still feel confident if they're put into a situation. Mm-hmm. And then also just to piggyback on that that question, did we include ancillary staff? I do agree that that is a wonderful question. We did think about that, and we decided that these are really clinical skills that are specific to our nurses in the fact that, yes, would there be a potential for, right, a PCT or even maybe a secretary being involved in, you know, some type of a medical emergency where we were going to have to start using ACLS protocols or a PALS protocol. However, they're probably not going to be in the thick of it. They might be there in the beginning and be very helpful in the event of, hey, can you call the specific number that we use at our hospital system to get things started and get the team here to help us in the while we get our protocol started. So that was some of our reasons for not including them this first time around. And I didn't think that it was going to be, we didn't think that it was going to be something that we could support as far as, you know, usually there's a shorting staffage for, you know, PCTs on the units and being able to support having them off the units for these types of, you know, part of the simulation.
Nicole, was there a question in the back?
Yeah. The sim you mentioned, you only do it once? And it becomes part of your competency, and of course it goes in their file. But do you do anything yearly to review the information?
Oh, yes. Just like Juliet was saying, we'll randomly kind of pop through and during a meeting or a random Wednesday where we don't have extra educational opportunities planned, we will revisit some of those sites and kind of ask questions. It's not a full-blown simulation, but it's more just like asking questions and making sure people feel confident. We shared our calendar earlier, and I just don't want anyone to feel overwhelmed. It's a pre-planned calendar based on the needs assessment. Hey, this is something that we're definitely going to talk about. We did not score 100% that everybody felt confident with this topic. And that's where we kind of want to continue to go. And if you don't have anything planned for that day, it's okay, because something's going to happen for you to teach. You're going to get a new piece of equipment. There's going to be like an event that maybe somebody reported that was a good catch. Like, hey, this almost happened, but it didn't because I caught it. And then you're going to teach that to your staff. You're going to find new and innovative ways to fill in holes or gaps. And if you have a calendar planned already from January to December, by the time the beginning of the year is rolling around and something happens and you can't utilize that topic, save it for another day. It's absolutely fine. So being fluid and being able to work on and off your schedule is a very important key fact.
Just to add to that too, so we have modules that they do every year, something called Develop You. I'm sure it's called something different at your site. And we chose specific topics. So every year they do address MH and last now, anesthetic agents, certain topics that they address every year on a module. But we wanted to make sure they got that SimLab experience. Also at our site, the SimLab team can come twice a year. So I know in our OR, our educator Island Park, and I think all the educators now, do a fire safety. So they have a fire safety quiz every year, but they also have the SimLab come and act out a fire safety event. And I think they do a malignant hyperthermia one as well. So that's two. We're blessed to have two free sessions a year. That's another option. It's hard with our staffing because our pre-post nurses are scheduled at different times throughout the day, as well as our PACU nurses, and then they're on call to it. So we wanted to have the SimLab just once a year, and we thought that would be best. We also had ideas where we could do a weekend at one year and have everybody come to one hospital, or do it at each hospital, and have it on a weekend and just have the nurses teach a couple different topics. So that's an option too. But we really like the SimLab idea. We had to book it about 8 months in advance, so they're very busy. But so it took a lot of planning. But that, you know, ideas always change. So just keep that in mind.
I would say that it does get very, it can become an overwhelming task. And that's why it's really important to keep calendar, because I think you're going to be really hard pressed to stay to that calendar date. And then that will, you know, be in your forefront of your mind to say, okay, I have set a goal. And be realistic with your goals. And then I think the reason why we were so successful is that our communication, if I can't say that enough, we really needed to have a clear, concise message to our leadership team to say, this is what we think is really, truly possible, but we need your support. And they were so supportive. And they asked great questions, and, you know, we learned together, we developed and created together, but without their support, we wouldn't have been able to you know, probably pull this off.
So we had monthly meetings that turned into actually twice a month meetings as we got closer to the SimLab. So the four educators, we would come together and work on things twice a month. So that helped a lot too, to have that dedicated time. And I think, Jillian, it might be helpful if we show some of the sim scenarios or some pictures. It'll help you visualize it. Yeah. We at our sim lab, they had preset simulation scenarios that we could have used, but we kind of just made up our own. We put some celebrities in there too. So because you had fun with it. And we let them know at the beginning of each session, this is fun, it's not supposed to be overwhelming. And I think it was really, really great to hear that feedback. Some people even said, can we do this twice a year?
There's pictures.
Do you want to get some documents?
Yeah, the pictures. So I know when most people think of a sim lab, right, we think of the Wizard of Oz people in the background, and you just kind of say, run the sim. But we wanted to make sure that we were in the sim lab with them. So there were two rooms where we had a simulation, and then for last in MH, it was more of a workshop type environment. So we'll go through that and show you the pictures.
So here's some photos. We'll start with photos because it's a little bit more fun. This is myself on the left and Jen on the right, and one of our anesthesiologists, Dr. Novak, in the middle. We couldn't do this without the support of some experts in the fields of all of these different areas. So anesthesia was amazing and partnered with us. We gave them information well in advance, and each person from, three or four, actually, anesthesiologists or CRNAs said, absolutely, I want to be a part of this. I want to help and teach you. I will run a simulation. So that was wonderful. They ran the MH sim, so to really teach, since they're going to be leading a lot of that area anyways. So that was great. This is, again, the skeleton that leads you to the way. These are two of our ASU preoperative nurses that were excited. Jen and Juliet in the actual simulation coordination room. So we couldn't have done this without the support of the simulation crew. There's a sign in the back that says believe, just to kind of get you excited for the day. One of our sessions was the pediatric laryngospasm. So if everybody recognizes the Braslow tape there, one of our nurses was measuring another nurse, you know, even though they're not peds, but hey, this is where we've got it. Very exciting time. This is, again, the room that we started in, and we read a lot of the housekeeping rules at the time, kind of given what to sign up for. And then the form, so when they finished their forms, we had something for them to put it in. This is a blurry photo, but it's because it's taken on a computer. So when you're in the simulation room, this is what it looks like. So you can see what's happening inside of the room. So here they're working on Taylor Swift. There's a lot of blonde hair on the mannequin there. She's blinged up. It's hard to see. She's got a big wristband on with bejazzled bracelets and whatnot. But she was real tired during her conference and went into third-degree heart block, unfortunately. But we saved her. All is well. One of our simulation staff members here, don't worry, I did this on a mannequin once. We couldn't be the only ones wearing this t-shirt, so we definitely shared with the other team that was there as well. So they were very excited to kind of have a little parting gift. During our last simulation, local anesthetic systemic toxicity, we did have to find lipids. We didn't get them from pharmacy. They're very expensive, so we were able to order them off of a website. So all of these things, again, are resources that we are sharing with you. And then inside each one of our last kits is a laminated picture of what is actually here. So everyone could take a picture of that and have it. It is from AORN and also the Anesthesiologist Association. It tells you exactly what to do in case of a last emergency. So we have this already packaged up together, including the laminated form. So it's not something that happens every day. But if it did, you grab out your form, and that's really what we taught. Follow the instructions, save your patient, give lipids, and give them fast, right? This one in here was the MH, so we have one of our CRNAs here is giving this educational opportunity, and we have one of our nurses actually drawing up Ryanodex. We recently transferred from Dantrolene, and we now have Ryanodex. I'm not sure what you guys have. It's going to be one or the other for sure. It's a lot easier to mix now, so we really wanted to focus on that. Not every nurse is going to have the opportunity to be able to be the med nurse, but in this situation, we were able to, again, find solutions of fake Ryanodex, but the bottle and the vial looked exactly like it's supposed to, real. It turned orange and everything, and you could actually administer the medications into the mannequin. So we reconstituted the medication. It was very easy to teach, and everyone was really excited. We weren't having to draw up multiple vials, if anybody's ever had to do that before, of Dantrolene, right?
I do want to say, too, I think it was at Glenbrook, right, Jules? So
this happened for real.
You could tell the story of that.
No, you go.
No, you can. It's your nurse.
Okay, so this is a real good takeaway. After
about a month or a few weeks, I want to say a few weeks right after we had our simulations across the four hospital sites, we had an on-call team for a routine, right, emergence overnight lap coli, and that patient ended up having a MH emergency. So one of our nurses that have attended our sim was there in the PACU waiting for that patient to arrive when she was called into the operating room for additional assistance, and she says, I can help. I feel confident in knowing how to manage this, or at least help, right, work with the rest of the anesthesia team and be able to support, and she helped support that situation. So, I mean, sure, there's always learning lessons, right, along the way. Was everything done 100% like the way it's supposed to be done? I'm not sure. However, it was a really good turnout. The patient had a very good outcome. And it just kind of reinforced, right, why we do what we do and, you know, try to help, you know, advocate for, you know, getting this education completed, I would say.
I even had a nurse, so it was cool since we had nurses from each site come and talk. They shared stories. I had a nurse, so I focused on the last session mostly, and a nurse worked in OB for, I don't know, 15 years, and she said, now I know why the anesthesiologist asked after the epidural if their mouth felt okay. She had no idea that, you know, perioral numbness and tingling and what the symptoms of last were. She had no idea. So it was just eye-opening for her. She said, I finally know. And it just made us feel really good that we were able to teach them what that is and how to treat it.
Yeah. Any questions so far? Or stories that you have yourself? We would love to hear them. Okay. Here again, we're in the Taylor Swift room. We're still trying to save her, but we had lots of nurses in there working together, again, all from different sites. Ooh, I might have went fast. There you go. Our pediatric patient had a laryngospasm. Everybody was excited to be able to save that patient. They worked on a lot of jaw thrust and how to give positive pressure ventilation. In this photo here, it was just a little bit artistic. I can't get it any bigger than that, but those were all of our sample Ryanodex bottles and our vials before they were reconstituted and mixed and turned orange. We were just pretty proud of them, so it looked neat. This one here, this is what our table looked like. So when the nurses arrived, they did sign in. There's a QR code that we asked them to do a survey on, and then they brought their papers with them throughout the entire half day and turned them in at the end. We did have some candy, so we made sure we took a picture so we could have evidence of that. And again, this is what the inside of the sim looks like. So this is one of our simulator techs. And again, she was so excited with the sign believe up there. She was happy to help us. She this one here, she coordinated the adult mock code. More of our team members, just to show you guys kind of how it is. Everybody's excited about the t-shirt. There's Taylor's bling. You can see a little bit there. Jennifer's teaching last. So we're going over the photo and the laminated form that is in the top of each and every one of our anesthetic block carts that are in the hallway, in the operating rooms, in the pre-op areas, in our PACU. It's always in the top drawer. Not sure where they are with you guys, but they're even labeled lipids. So in case of an emergency, that's where it's at. It's in a plastic bag. Everything's in there that you would even need. So we went through that, how to hang lipids, what to do, how to push them fast. Everybody got to practice that in here. Yeah, and as you can see, again, low-key environment. Everybody's coming up, asking questions. We had a laptop available to do a small presentation, almost like a YouTube video, just about what a block looks like in case someone has never seen one before. And then I partnered with Jen as well, doing a last simulation, so we're getting ready there. Couple more. So those are a lot of our photos. I know we're sharing a lot, but exciting. You gonna pull up the video? I'm gonna find it, Jen. Give me 1 second. So So this one here, we tried to do like a loop photo. So this was actually a picture, but it just keeps going over and over again. So you can see we've got one nurse doing CPR and the other one's actually already got the pads on and they're going to try to pace. So one of our nurses with the glasses on is actively turning on the defibrillator machine to get it to pace. So that's a little example there.
Yeah, so one of our goals too, we didn't want it to be like their ACLS and PALS classes where you had to have a co-leader and you had to know everything. So we were in the room and we worked as a group. We made a cheat sheet for ourselves too with, you know, how long we wanted to spend on each section. But we would say, what do you guys think, right? Got to check for a pulse. So we walked it through with them. And we made sure each nurse went through the crash cart. So it was very hands-on and they learned a lot. And they asked a lot of really, really great questions too.
Here's another video we have. We just think this is so adorable. Oki is one of our longtime nurses and is such a joy to work with. We were teaching how to push lipids, and what song did we play? We played Salt and Pepper. Push it. Because you have to push your lipids fast. You must save your patient. So as that song was playing, Oki decided to get up and dance and really made everyone laugh. She's laughing. She's having a good time.
Push. Or I like
you saying push. I mean, you got to have fun with it sometimes just to make everything as exciting as it can be. We had a blast doing this, so. All right, as we continue to go through here, Juliette will come back and get talking on creating a standardized peri-anesthesia orientation, which is our last topic, so bear with us.
Thank you, Jillian. Okay, so this is the dry part of this discussion here today. Who wants to talk about orientation? It's so fun. So I just wanted to say that I know that not everybody's an educator in this room. Some people are managers, maybe directors. So orientation was kind of a big deal when we came into this role. We all had a different orientation at all four of our hospital sites, so it wasn't standardized whatsoever. Obviously, you know now, after we discussed, that we have different patient populations that we care for. I had copies of copies of copies of an old orientation form that I looked at when I first started in my role as a nurse there. And I said, oh boy, we've got some work to do. So with that being said, we recognized there was a need for a standard orientation. And raise your hand if your organization or educators have created standardized orientation for your nurses. I mean, you might not have the same situation where, you know, you have sister hospitals or you just might be like a standalone hospital or an ASC or whatever the situation is. So a few hands were raised there. That's good. We wanted to create a core set of knowledge skills that the RNs needed to know. Regardless of where they worked out of these four hospital sites. So that was really important to us. We added additional required skills for the specific patient populations at each legacy site. This will make more sense on our next slide. But we utilized the ASPAN standards, again, we're going back to those standards, to create one orientation document to be utilized in all phases of care, so pre-op, post-op, or phase one, phase two, whatever you guys want to call, and PACU, at our hospitals within our organization. So this is like one example. We just took a screenshot of what ours looks like, one page, and it is our peri-anesthesia clinical nursing orientation. And then in the middle section where it's blank, you can see that that's like the evaluation method that we chose. Observed is O, verbalized is V, and hands-on during patient care is H. Knowledgeably knowing that all of those aren't always going to be filled out, like each section's not going to have an O, V, and an H, right, as the evaluation method that the preceptor would be filling out. We also want to recognize that, you know, sometimes during your orientation, you don't always see everything, right? So you don't always see, get to observe specific scenarios or a specific skill set. So you might just, we at least want to recognize that our preceptors are verbalizing these different things with our patients, our new nurse, right, during their orientation process. So we want to make sure that they're going through that. One of the questions we got asked from our managers is how we created such a robust document. Our document is a little bit lengthy, but that's just because of the formatting of what how we put it in this document. However, we completed multiple literature searches to find previously created orientation from other institutions. So we use that as a guide, as well as our ASPAN standards of care, and we kind of melded everything together. The goal was to have at least the verbalized in the evaluation method in the event that they didn't have a hands-on experience or observed it during their orientation. We spoke to the preceptors, and we had a clear message across the four hospital sites with the educators to make sure that we were consistent in how we were approaching this because, you know, standardization is not always easy. I'm sure you probably recognize that. sometimes we have a term is standardize the unstandardizable. It's not always easy. So you have to have a lot of conversation and buy-in, and everybody has to be on the same page for that to be successful. So in regards to that, we spoke to the preceptors, managers, and didn't want any sections to not be filled in as, like, not applicable, as we often see. Sometimes when you get those, you know, orientation packets back, you're like, wait a minute, half of this isn't filled out. How is that even possible? So that's another conversation. but it's important that the preceptor and the orientee discuss these topics, even if they don't have that opportunity to practice that skill. So this is a slide. This is an example of a specific type, site-specific topics. So for example, like fetal demise, most often those patients are routed through our Evanston, Glenbrook, or Highland Park hospitals. Through like an ER, if somebody's having some kind of emergency, they're not going to be sending those patients to Skokie Hospital, that's an orthopedic and spine institute, for that kind of care. Those nurses are at Evanston, Glenbrook, Highland Park, at minimum, have to have a verbalization if they've never had a hands-on experience of how to deal with an Anora kit and or providing a Rogam administration and the appropriate documentation. However, even though Skokie doesn't generally deal with those types of patients at their, you know, as their normal patient population, they might have to float to our areas. Are they going to get assistance if they have a patient that requires this? Of course they are. We're going to support them, but we still want to have them verbalize that those skills with their preceptor during their orientation. And then also including, so this is our last page of the orientation packet, and it is including shadowing experiences or opportunities. At this end of the document, sometimes we provide opportunities and set these up with the CRNA, spend time with the CRNA in the operating room. They can be in the operating room to view some surgeries and observe, sometimes help, cath lab, observe what is a PCT, what's their role, how can we, I think it's really important that our nurses are spending either a half shift, right, with our PCTs and our secretaries. How do you appropriately answer the phone? How do you use this, like, complicated phone that has so many different buttons? And, you know, we just want to give them the best of, you know, opportunities that they can to feel successful in their role once they're on their own. So we're all one team. This is the last page. We uploaded our example. We uploaded an example, I think, on the app. You might see that as some of the things. We use a weekly touch point. It's a form that we created, and it's in the resources section for you to access. So we scheduled weekly check-ins via calendar invite with the orientee, the preceptor, and the educator. And we met with them weekly. And we discussed, right? We discussed with them, how are things going? What are our opportunities? What are we missing the ball on anything? Where are you struggling in your orientation thus far? What do we need to do to make changes to help support you feel successful in your orientation? We also talked about what are the big wins for this week? How do we discuss that? how do we discuss the big wins? What's going well? Things of that nature. It really helped us keep a pulse on where we were in the orientation. So I've been doing this for 30 years. I know many of you have been have all different experiences. I remember you would have somebody on orientation for wherever specialty you were in, and you get to the end of the orientation, and the manager would be like, what's happening here? How come I didn't know about this? There were issues all along, and now this person is struggling when they're on their own. This is why it was really important for us to be able to get a constant pulse on what's going on so we don't run into that at the end. Now this person, new employee, is on their own and they're really struggling. Where did we miss the ball, right? So, anyway, so that's kind of where we're doing these weekly touch points. It's really important to ensure that we received honest feedback about the orientation from the preceptor and the orientee. We'd also set up separate one-on-ones with just the educator and the orientee so they could give us honest feedback on if they were having any problems. Was there a mismatch with their preceptor? Are things not going well with their preceptor? Do we need to consider putting them with somebody else? That often happens. Sometimes during that other meeting with our touch points, they're not always feeling confident to tell us that. So it was really important that we meet with them separately. And then, Jen, do you want us to tell us about your experience?
Oh, yeah, I can just add to that. So we had a nurse, and we did the weekly touch points, and about 2 months into it, she was a new grad in the PACU. We could tell she was a little more withdrawn. So I talked to her one-on-one, and the CC talked to her one-on-one, and we found out that she wanted to go to ICU, and she wanted more of a challenge, which PACU's challenging in and of itself, but that was really important to find out 2 months in instead of waiting, you know, 1 year in or 6 months in, and she still stayed within the system. And I recently transitioned to a nurse practitioner job at Glenbrook Hospital, and I saw her in the new cardiovascular ICU, so that was really cool, because we want everybody to be happy, right? You have one life to live, and you want to support them the best you can, and I think knowing your limitations and knowing what goals they have supporting their career as well really helps. And we were all new to our role as educators, so it took a lot, right? You have to build trust with that team. Coming in, it's a new role, new team, never existed before. It takes patience and it takes time, and it was really cool. I always said my office was like Vegas. What happens here stays here. So they always felt like they could come and talk to us, and it was really cool to be trusted with difficult conversations as well. If they didn't want to go to their clinical coordinator or manager, they would come to us too. So it wasn't just, you know, being an educator, it's being a mentor and a support person as well.
Yeah. Awesome. So we're at our last breakout session for questions. Anybody have questions about how to build a standardized orientation or just orientation in general? If there's any struggles that you're feeling as far as, you know, updating your orientation. I mean, we started from scratch. It was tenfold, like where we started with, you know, that form that I looked at, that was copies of copies of copies that were used just routinely because, you know, education is generally the first thing that, you know, gets cut, right, from the budget because that's what happens, right? That's just kind of where it's been. Historically, and sometimes it's not in the budget to have an educator or have an ability, and the managers are so busy. They have so many other responsibilities that education's the last thing that they're, you know, sometimes don't always have the ability to keep up the pace, right, with, like, how do we get the education to our team effectively, and maybe they don't always have the support as well. So just had any, does anybody have any questions regarding, you know, how can I do this? How can I update my orientation? What does that look like?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So we have it in a Google Doc right now, so that'll be easy to share. And then we can send you like a PDF of it too. So what we do is the Google Doc's the working document, and then we save it as a PDF because it's easier to print.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's hard, right? It's hard coming up with, right? Like we need to share our resources amongst like all the organizations to, you know, just improve and build upon what we've already started. So we absolutely are happy to share that with you. So you don't have to start from scratch. Yep. And whatever you don't like, you can edit it out, whatever you need to do, right? To make it your own and to, you know, be able to fit that to your needs of your institution for sure. Does anybody else have any questions, concerns, comments, anything you want to share that you've built that, you know, we can take back to our institution or organization to, you know, help us? I know it's a dry subject, orientation.
What you got?
Okay. That's a good question. I will tell you, at my organization, we had utilized a lot of the same preceptors over and over, and it was increasingly being stressful, right, for those preceptors because they were being utilized so often. So I basically started... I had a meeting. This is at my organization. Specifically, I had a meeting, and I said, I would like, this is an open forum. Come on in when there's some downtime, and let's talk about it. And I said, this is what a preceptor's role. What does it look like? What are your responsibilities and duties? And I set up really clear expectations, and I put that in a document, and I sent them to my entire team. And I said, if you have any desire or you have a passion for perianesthesia and you want to share it with somebody else, this could be a really great opportunity to advance our practice and to advance your own personal professional development. And I had seen so much growth in some of these team members that needed a little bit of a nudge. And I said, you know, some of our preceptors, routinely, I had to pull somebody back, and I said, you know, I can see that, you know, you're struggling because maybe we have overutilized you. So she took a step back, and I had somebody else step into her place in the event because I really didn't have anybody at that time. And this person grew exponentially. And there were some doubts from some leadership that was a good idea. And I said, if you don't try, you'll never know. And I saw this person like by leaps and bounds, and she loves it. And now she's also graduated into like a more leadership role. And, you know, so I said, I think it's a conversation starter. And I think it's just something that if you have set up clear expectations, and also to provide them the support to meet with them routinely to say, hey, how's it going? Yeah. How can I support you as an educator in this role that you've now taken on, that we've asked you to take on? And I think they appreciate that. I think it's just, you know, just giving them the time to say, hey, listen, we understand this is difficult. I used to be a preceptor before I was in this role for many years, right? Like, I get it. So I think they just want to hear that feedback, and they just... So I think that's kind of where I started. I don't know what your experiences are.
A lot of it's manager preference as well,
right? My direct manager, she's very, very consistent. She really wants consistency. This person is going to precept this new nurse, and they're going to follow her schedule throughout, and that's what it's going to be. If they call in, we're going to put that orientee with someone else that time. You know, you're always going to find a solution, but we are very much on consistency basis. However, we did a SurveyMonkey. Again, I always go back to SurveyMonkey. Get the data. Get the answers from your team. No side conversations. No complaining in the break room. It leads more to a direct answer. So taking a survey and getting it out to the staff and really having participation will give you the answers that you need. So when we did that, we were able to find that most people in our organization at Skokie Hospital, they felt that they got a more robust orientation when they got to experience orientation with different nurses. At the end of the day, there might be 15 ways to do something, and it's how is your way, as long as it's still following the guidelines, but how? What are you going to do when you're off orientation? You saw Joey do it, you saw Sandra do it, and you saw Alexis do it, you know, and they were all within guidelines, and what is that new nurse going to take from those three people and be able to do on their own? So I think that was really eye-opening for my manager as well. Like, oh, maybe they don't need to be with the same person every single time. I do not think that there's a right answer, and I don't think there's a wrong answer. I think it's learning your team and seeing where you can be fluid.
I would say, too, though, that as long as you have a core group of preceptors to choose from, that helps a lot. I've been at organizations when I've been a new employee there, and I had about 7 different preceptors, which can be overwhelming too, because you just get to learn somebody's style, get to know them, and then they switch. So I would say where I'm at, so with Highland Park, pre-post-PACU, our pre-op and post-op nurses can float between the sites. So pre-op, we had 2 preceptors. Post-op, we had 2. And then PACU, like, we tried to keep it no more than 2 preceptors, but we would have about a group of 5 total to choose from. And that's why those weekly touch points were so important, because we wanted to address the preceptors' needs as well, because they can get burnout, right? Especially if you need to hire 6 new OR nurses and your orientation 6 months, you got to take that into consideration. To constantly feel like you're precepting is a lot. And I think that's an important conversation to have, and to know your limits as well.
No, I agree with that. Yeah. There's a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You're right.
That's absolutely.
You one see one teach one, right? We do. They turn that in at the end of their orientation as well. When they turn in their packet, there's a preceptor evaluation.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood the question. Go ahead.
So they have a preceptor class that they go to originally, and that's how they can officially become a preceptor. That's through the organization. We have a preceptor evaluation tool where the orientee rates them, but we don't rate them ourselves. That would be good. Our roles too, we're in staffing, so I don't know if that's how it is everywhere. It's like 50-50, some weeks more than others. Which I think was great for our job, because we knew what needed to be changed because we were in staffing. We knew Epic, right? We knew the workflows. When CVI was being built, we were there the first 2 months starting IVs and taking patients and seeing everything. I think that helped us connect with the nurses too. So I always think it keeps you grounded as well. That's a good idea for us to evaluate them.
That's an amazing idea. Yeah. I think that's an amazing idea. That's something that we can bring back to our team and develop something or create it, because we don't have that current state. But I do think that that is an advantage to our role, is that when we are in staffing, we're tag teaming a lot, right? Like, we're working directly with those nurses. We're also using them. When I had instituted some new programs specifically through Glenbrook Hospital, And when I developed that education, I needed a lot of help because we needed to sign off so many people with a competency. And it wasn't just you're one and done and you're competent in this. You needed to repeat that skill multiple times before we were going to sign them off. So I needed to use some of those same nurses that I would use as preceptors. Part of the leadership team is charge nurses to be like super users. And I think when we worked alongside them, that really helps us, you know, like we're paying attention quietly in the corner to say, is this somebody that has the qualities, right? Are they able to communicate effectively? Do we want them, you know, would they be good in a preceptor role? And that kind of helped us too. But
Before we came into our roles, the preceptors were already picked, and there were two preceptors that I didn't think really wanted to be preceptors anymore. And after talking to them, they were honest, and I said, all right, let's get you out of this role. But they felt like they didn't have a choice before. So after talking to them and being honest, they said, we want you to be effective in this role, right? We want to keep you. So I think that was important, and it built that camaraderie too. When we go back to our form that we signed off for annual education, if you guys notice, it says skills validation. It doesn't say competency. It says skills validation. We knew the next year when we did the sim lab, we wanted to have it be more like a sim where they run through it together, and we'll build on that. We even had some ideas to do an escape room, which I still really want to do. I think that'd be fun, but we wanted to start small. But even doing literature searches, you can find escape rooms. It was for MedSurg. We had a whole folder in our shared drive about ideas for the future. So we're always thinking, we're always getting feedback. But yeah, I think communication is one of the biggest factors that
Yeah, and then just one more thing about the preceptors. Jillian, like what you said, and just, I mean, you can get SurveyMonkey, you can go crazy with your SurveyMonkeys, and like it's like almost overload with your team. So you have to kind of pick and choose with like, how many SurveyMonkeys am I going to give in a year, right? Because to obtain like data, because people get SurveyMonkeyed out and then they're just not going to fill them out anymore. And then you have a very small sample size. So you have to be kind of cognizant of that too. But what you said was like amazing, because we try to stick to the rule of, right, like two, no more than two preceptors for consistency, because I think that that's what somebody new, especially if they're completely new in a peri-anesthesia world, that's a big change, right, for them. And it just, I think consistency is key, but you also just have to feel out your orientee, right? Some of them are absolutely, and they will be vocal, and they'll say, hey, I'm fine bopping around with many people because I want to see all the different ways to come, right, to do that skill still in a safe manner, right? But so you just have to feel out your orientee as well and kind of, you know, gauge them to say, you know, get that feedback during those one-on-one sessions to say, you know, to understand, you know, what can I do with, you know, what do I need to change to make this a effective orientation process for them.
And even too, it just could be something as simple. So I'm a lefty. So when I first learned how to start IVs, my preceptor is right-handed, and I just could not get it. So she wasn't my preceptor, but she was a lefty too. So just for the IV starts, I had her, and it was just something as simple as that. And then I was great at it. But it's funny because those little things, I was like, I don't know why I can't do the IVs. And the preceptor's like, well, it's because you're left-handed. I'm like, oh. And then I switched and I got it. So just something as simple as that could make a world of difference. So just talk to your team.
Yeah. All right, you guys want to come on up and finish up takeaways?
Sure. Come on,
come on.
We were definitely trying to think about what to take away here before everybody actually took away on an airplane to go back to their home. We appreciate you guys for staying. I know we had a lot that we had to talk about. But one of the big things is by setting goals for yourself and your team, this ensures that you stay on track. You will have working documents, and it's okay not to be perfect all the time. It is okay. Making changes shows growth. Healthcare is ever-evolving, and this is what we can just show a testament to ourselves and to our teams every day. Whether you're involved in education or you're not, just know that that's something. So be patient with yourself and set realistic and attainable goals with target dates on a calendar. Yeah.
Don't set yourself up for failure and make this huge attainable goal that you're ready for and make the deadline be a month away. You know, it's just let yourself and prove to yourself that you can do it. It's okay if it's going to be in October and you're making this in January. That's your end goal. If you finish it sooner than that, congratulations. You know, be grateful and be excited about it.
I think too, just like the keynote speaker talked about yesterday, having it on a calendar really helps you stay focused, because there would be some weeks where I would be in staffing for 2 weeks at a time and I might not be able to tackle that goal, but seeing it on a calendar helped me stay grounded. And then the last bullet point is utilize your resources, right? Whether it's here at a conference, we'll share anything you want, your leadership team. I know we really want Microsoft Teams at our company. Hopefully we'll get that soon. But even something like that, right? Do you have Google Docs? Do you have Teams? Do you have WebEx? So when I would do weekly meetings, so I did weekly educational topics with my staff. And so I would have a go-to, well, now it's WebEx meeting, share the screen, and it wasn't always just PowerPoints. I'd have people come and talk. Those were the little extra things that we wanted them to learn every year. And so figure out what resources you have. Reach out to your librarian, right, because they're the experts. And then involve leadership along your journey, because they have plenty of resources, too. And then there's a QR code here. It's on the PowerPoint as well. If you scan it, you'll get the CE credit, and then you can do a survey. And then the last slide, and I'll go back to it. And then this is just our contact info. So if you want any documents that aren't in the app, please feel free to email us, and we'll send you those over. We're happy to share anything we have. We can even share like the Sim Labs resources if you want to see our scenarios. Happy to do that too.
Anybody have any questions?
Yeah. Anything else?
Well, thank you to Jennifer, Juliet, and Jillian. Give them a round of applause. Great content. Thank you.